This episode is brought to you by Morty, Buzzshot, Cogs by Clockwork Dog, Recon, and Patreon supporters like you.
Cogs by Clockwork Dog is an easy-to-use software-hardware platform for running interactive events, including escape rooms and other immersive experiences. Their plug-and-play hardware seamlessly integrates with their software, so you can create a show with lighting and sound cues without having to write a single line of code. Map all kinds of inputs to outputs by building up simple logic steps, which determine what you want to happen and when. Cogs 5 is now available. There's new and improved functionality, including remote connectivity, Zigbee connections to power smart bulbs, buttons, and switches. There's an app that turns any smartphone into your own media master. There's MIDI support to connect keyboards and instruments, as well as relay support. There is also Buzzshot integration, so you can pull the player's information directly into the game. Get the Cogs starter set for only $130 plus free shipping to the USA. This bundle is usually valued at $257. You can learn more and purchase your starter set at cogs.show. Use code REPOD at checkout. That's REPOD. Link and details in the show notes.
Welcome to the Reality Escape Pod, your lifeline when you need a getaway from the real world. I'm David Spira, alongside my co-host, PG Law. Together, we're exploring immersive gaming from all angles, and we'll be joined by guests who really know their stuff. This season, we are shining a spotlight on Southern California in celebration of our convention, Recon, which will be in Universal City, California on August 18th and 19th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at realityescapecon.com. And today's guest is Jared Butler, writer, voice actor, cosplayer, and owner of two multi-day immersive LARP festivals in the middle of the Mojave Desert, the Mad Max-inspired post-apocalyptic Wasteland Weekend, and the cyberpunk Neotropolis. Welcome, Jared.
Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you on here. David knows, our loyal listeners know, I've gone to Neotropolis twice in a row. I absolutely loved it. And also, I was a raver kid back in my 20s in like the early 90s. And so this event really combines my love of neon-filled dance parties out in the desert with immersive experiences, storytelling. There's puzzles, there's quests, there's all kinds of things going on. David calls it a LARP, which it is, but I feel like that gives a different impression. I would call it more of an open world immersive experience that takes place over 5 days. It's super exciting to have you on. Let's start with Wasteland Weekend, which I haven't been to yet. I know you co-founded this back in 2010.
Right.
What is this madness and why did you create it?
As a fan of the Mad Max films, I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of things, but that was one of my fandoms. Some friends of mine, we thought, could there be a kind of real life Mad Max experience? And what would that look like? And there had been some other Mad Max fan events before, but we felt like we could bring something special to it. It started very small. In 2010, it was just a few hundred people. We were wondering if people would really show up for this. And there was almost no LARP aspect at the very beginning, other than what people created in their own minds. It was more focused on, can we create a feeling of living inside a movie set, except there are no cameras? So find a place in the desert with a 360-degree view of the Mojave with no civilization in sight. Require everyone to wear costumes, which at the time just seemed like a no-brainer. Like, well, if you want to make it immersive, everybody needs to look the part, right? In hindsight, I think that was the thing that really separated us from everything else. I'll come back to that, but the word immersive and what that sort of means for our events versus others. But we did this, and we had some music and DJs and costume contests and some vehicles out there and all that. And we realized we had something special and people were excited about it. And quickly over the next couple of years, it transformed into something much larger. So the version we have today is still the basis of what it was, which is it's based on kind of the Mad Max universe, but we bring in other post-apocalyptic elements. The game Fallout was always a big influence, and lots of other things from anime to comic books to video games, as long as it stays very grounded. We knew that, especially in those days, that it would be difficult for us to have a large sci-fi element or fantasy element for budget reasons, but also prosthetic makeup doesn't do well in 100-degree heat. Like, all those reasons were like, let's just keep it more real world. And that was our main theme rule, right? We get some people who think our theme is way too restrictive. And we get some people who think we're way too permissive. We try to stay somewhere in the middle, but basically if you show up with a bunch of dirty clothes on and you're not wearing a white t-shirt and jeans, you'll probably be okay. Our slogan is, you don't have to win the costume contest, you just have to not ruin somebody's photo, right? And then we found out very quickly that people wanted to form their own camps and form their own tribes with people that they come out to camp with. So we had very distinct camps starting very early. But in terms of the theme aspect and what people have to do and that high bar for entry, we didn't want the bar for entry to be too high. We didn't want people to feel like, oh, I need a really cool custom car and a costume and build a whole structure that fits. I need to do all of that just to be able to come out. No, you don't. To this day, people still sometimes say, oh, am I allowed to come in if I don't have a cool car? Am I allowed to come in if I don't have a special campsite? Yeah. So what we do is we have non-themed and themed camping. So we have a whole themed area that we call Wasteland City, where everything has to be 100% in theme. You know, not necessarily the best version of that, but it can't just be a regular tent, a regular car. But then 2/3 of the camping area is just regular tents, regular cars, regular camping. So it's theme optional. People still theme out like crazy out there, but you don't have to. The only thing that's not optional is a costume, so that when you wander into the city, you're not ruining it, right? So it's a little bit like a movie set, like I said, but with no cameras, other than we do have video and photo crew. But I came from a motion picture background before getting into this. So it was all about visually, what is it going to be? And it was always meant to be the Hollywood version of the apocalypse, never super realistic. So when people come in and they're like, oh, why isn't there more prepping going on? And blue jeans would totally survive the apocalypse. And a bright blue tarp is, that's a polypropylene or whatever material. That would be just fine. Yeah, we know all of that. But the point is, we're trying to look cool out here.
You're selling the Hollywood version of the fantasy, not the real apocalypse.
Because it's supposed to be fun. You know, like there's a difference between watching The Road and watching The Road Warrior.
Yeah.
They both have their merits, but one's going to be a lot more fun and exciting at the end of the day. Some people come from all over the world, and if they're coming out to spend 5 days in the desert, they don't want to just be depressed the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. It's a party, number one. But beyond that, there quickly evolved this really cool mix between the LARP aspect, where it was what you want to put into it, right? So there are people who come out and they just use their real name. They don't have a different character. Yeah, they follow our costume requirements. But other than that, they just come out to relax and have a drink with their friends and everything else. And then there are people who have a whole backstory and all this other stuff. And at Wasteland, it was very much a user-generated LARP and lore thing.
That's one of my big questions for you as I've been researching this, because I haven't been. I live out on the East Coast, and getting out to the middle of the desert is a challenge. How much of this event is scripted and planned by the organizers, and how much of this is created by the love and skill and chaos of the community that attends?
So it depends on which event you're talking about. At the very beginning of Wasteland, we kind of resisted the LARP thing. We were concerned that people would feel like it's a traditional LARP, which it has never been. We were worried that people were going to come out and think, well, are there rules for combat and all this other kind of stuff, which we don't have any of that. So because of that resistance, and we wanted people to create their own story. So we never even had like a main storyline that we would come up with for Wasteland. And to this day, it is a little bit chaotic. It's fun in that way, but it is almost 100% on the story side, almost 100% user generated. We just ask them not to do something that just seems completely out of place. For Neotropolis, it being a much newer event, we went in with that one from the beginning with the idea that we would be establishing a central storyline. There would be actors. We would have event-generated missions and all of that stuff. There would be a plan. However, we'll talk more about Neotropolis in a bit, but that one still does have some user-generated content as well. We wanted to leave the door open for some of that because some of that is really cool. Wasteland is now going into its 14th year. We skipped 1 year because of the pandemic. On our larger years, we get upwards of 4,000 people. We get more than 200 custom cars that come out. We have a full slate of live bands. We have these amazing themed camps that people build out there. We have a permanent home in the desert, which we actually own. We own the land that the event takes place on. But it is a really big thing, and people come from all over the world, and it's been doing really well. Whereas Neotropolis, being the newer thing, is still on that same piece of property, but it's a sort of cyberpunk skin over Wasteland. And there's a lot of other little differences, too.
This all sounds incredible, and we have a ton of different questions that we want to explore with you here. The first one I really want to just have a better sense of is, what are the kinds of activities and actions and things that people can participate in when they visit Wasteland Weekend?
Right. So you pull into Wasteland Weekend, you hand over your ticket. I want to hit on some of the things that are different. People that have been to other festivals, maybe some of the differences. So if you're one of the themed camps, the ones in the theme zone, the approved tribes, we call them different things, but you have already gone through an application process, if you're one of those, that shows us that you're going to do something themed.
Can we talk a little bit about what you mean by a themed camp?
Yeah. So if you're going to be in what we call Wasteland City, you're going to be a camp that has committed to trying to have a 360 degree themed experience. It can be very elaborate, but it can also be pretty simple. It can just be, well, we've got this old military tent and we're not going to park our modern cars there. And if we have a cooler, we're going to cover it with an old painter's tarp or whatever. You can do some simple things like that. All it means is that you don't have a blue pop-up and you don't have these things that would give it away, that you're just at a modern festival camp. All the way up to, we have people that, like, there's a cool replica inspired by the atoll from Waterworld that they built, and people do these big lounges. Some of these camps have tall towers that they set up. We're talking full structures with plywood and 2x4s and all of that. And bear in mind, everything we do out there starts with empty desert and goes back to empty desert after the event's over. We don't have any permanent structures. So we build and take down this city every single event. So what a theme camp would be, you also would often, to get better placement, you want to provide something interactive. So for example, you could be the tribe that hosts karaoke nights. You could be the tribe that says, hey, we do costume help. We worship the god of dirt. And if you're not dirty enough or feeling like you didn't distress your costume well enough, come by us and we'll do a ceremonial dirtying down of your costume. Because we're so close to Hollywood, we get people who are in the Costumers Guild. We get people who are in the union for makeup and all this other stuff. And a themed camp is really just that, is what do you think you could create. Could be something directly from the films, could be inspired by, could be your own creation. It could be that you teach workshops during the day of how to do some kind of cool apocalyptic crafting or whatever. And then you get placed on the map.
I can vouch for how cool some of these props are, even though I've never been to Wasteland Weekend. But Christine Barger, who was our guest on season 6, she has an escape room in Southern California. And the coolest prop in her escape room is a reverse bear trap. It's welded from metal. It's really elaborate. And she always tells us when anybody comments on it, she was like, that was made by Squirrel, who makes a lot of stuff for Wasteland Weekend. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if this is the caliber of talent that's making stuff out there, it's no wonder the theme camps look so cool.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things is to just walk around and look at the amount of detail out there. And some of that takes years to build up. It's such a big thing that little details take time and vehicles take time to build. And luckily, we've been around long enough that this stuff has really built up to where it's mind-boggling how much stuff you can just look around at.
So one of the things that's really mind-boggling to me when I look at videos or images from Wasteland Weekend are the themed cars.
Yeah.
These are crazy. And we'll put some photos in the show notes, but they look like Mad Max vehicles.
We've had vehicles that are direct replicas from the films that are basically bolt and rivet perfect to what the original was. We've had at least one car that was used in filming that was out there. And then we have people that make original creations that are just amazing. Everything from motorcycles to go-karts to crazy contraptions. we get these amazing creations over the years, and many of them are not street legal, so they have to be trailered out. Some of them get trailered coming in from Canada and places like that. And we have a car cruise that we do, which is about the size or larger than the Armada that Morton Joe had in Fury Road. Maybe not quite that maybe not quite that quality. We don't have that kind of budget, but the sheer number of vehicles out there that people can ride on and hang out with, that vehicular aspect is different too. Because we have all this space, because we're in the Mojave Desert, that's not something you're going to get at an indoor convention, right? It's not something that you're otherwise going to get. And we're so lucky to have this desert landscape, right? I mean, there aren't that many places in the world or even in the United States where you can be out in this beautiful desert. And with it being only 2 hours from LA, it seems a shame not to use it, right? Not to have this Mad Max environment.
It adds an incredible layer of realism that you're never going to get in any polished 1 hour experience, because it is authentic. You are out in the desert. There are vehicles roaring around you. You can smell the smoke and feel mm-hmm. the heat. Yeah. It's really otherworldly.
Yeah. And we sometimes get sandstorms and things like that that are very real that we have to deal with.
Fun.
So, Jared, what's up with the bottle caps?
The bottle caps. Okay. So this question does get asked a lot. In fact, one of our folks came up with an entire infographic that we put on our website because it comes up so much. I want to say from year one, it was because the video game Fallout used bottle caps as currency, people thought it would be fun to do that. And we also wanted to have kind of a bartering system out there because that would be fun. It's very authentic to a post-apocalyptic world that real world money wouldn't work anymore. So you'd barter for things or you'd pay with bottle caps. People would come up with their own paper currencies with their faces on it and things like that. It was all really just for fun. There was never a set system. So we get emails sometimes like, well, if I come out with 100 Heineken caps, and then do those count more as like Dos Equis caps? Or no, it doesn't work that way. If you want to bring bottle caps for fun, that's fine. And then there's only one place where there is a little bit of a system, which is that we have a casino. And that casino is just run with bottle caps. So they have to make their own caps that have actual value in quotes, because they're not really used for any money, but you can win prizes and things like that. Other than that, it's a completely unregulated system just for fun, but it tends to cause people some stress and confusion, especially when they try to pay our actual food vendors with bottle caps. No, you need to pay them with real. You need to pay them with real money. Part of that confusion, though, is, you know, people who've been to Burning Man, and Burning Man is over 70,000 people, so it's a very big deal. There is no money exchange there for the most part. They have a whole ethos and a whole philosophy that we don't have. We're just like, no, if you want to buy food, you need to give us money.
Right. You have two ecosystems at these events. I know they're actual currency, but there is an end game. There's actually three different ecosystems, I would argue, in some ways, because you've got the barter, you've got you earning money from missions. This is all for Neotropolis, which we'll get to later.
But it's a little different there. Yeah. That's a little more regimented and regulated.
So a little known fact, BottleMark is a company that creates a lot of custom bottle caps for home brewers, and Wasteland Weekenders are one of their most notable clients. I know they do a lot of work for people who are attending Wasteland Weekend. Yeah. And most people probably don't know this, but the owners of BottleMark are Cameron and Haley Cooper, who are the owners of Strange Bird Immersive and have created Man from Beyond, which is one of the top ranked games in the United States.
Wow, that's impressive. So the BottleMark thing I knew about, because years ago, some of our folks found BottleMark. They were a company that was doing a business for, like, if you're making homebrew in your garage and you need a special custom bottle cap for your Schrader Brow or whatever, you'd get it from them. And because of the bottle cap thing at our events, people wanted their own bottle caps. It's like handing out your business card or whatever. So people are getting bottle caps with their custom design, with their faces on it. And BottleMark just started getting all of these weird orders that they'd never gotten before. And they're like, what is happening out there? And it's become such a thing now. In fact, when the sheriff's department was out, because we have sheriffs and fire department on site, they're the only ones who don't have to wear costumes.
But do they choose to?
No. In fact, if they did, we would say, please don't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
because we actually say the same thing with our in-house medical and security staff that's out there. They're sort of in theme, but I'm like, you know what? In an emergency, I don't want to have to guess who's a... It's one of the little regulations we have. Like, you're not allowed to have a Wasteland costume that has a bunch of red crosses on it and look like a Wasteland doctor. If someone's had a few drinks and they're having a problem, I don't want any confusion as to what's real in that kind of moment, right?
This is
really smart. We're going to dig more into some of those logistics in a moment.
Sure. Yeah. So anyway, so the bottle mark thing, what was great though, is the sheriffs were like, we want bottle caps to hand out. And so they're like, can we do that? And then, so we hooked them up with bottle caps, and they did their special Kern County Sheriff's Department bottle caps, which became very collectible. And then the fire department got jealous. They're like, wait a minute, wait.
As they do.
Yeah. Well, they thought maybe we gave them to them. Like, no, you guys got to do this yourselves. We'll give you the resources, but no, you need to do these. And they didn't, I will say, they didn't use taxpayer dollars. They paid out of their own pocket for their bottle caps. But yeah, it's really fun.
Oh, that's super fun. So I asked Haley if she had any interesting stories. And she said, when customers place orders for Wayside Weekend, a lot of times they'll often leave in-world instructions like, witness me. And she says, so then I'll write back, we will ride shiny and chrome to the gates of Valhalla. And she says, she always loves the in-character engagements. She loves Wastelanders and that they are joyful people.
I'm so happy to hear that their customers, our attendees and community members are very positive, which I get that a lot, and it always makes me proud.
We're taking a moment to thank our sponsor, Morty. Morty is a free app for discovering, planning, tracking, and reviewing escape rooms, haunts, and other immersive social outings. And Morty is now available for all to use on its fantastic website experience, iPhone app, and its new Android app, available in the Google Play Store now. I believe in Morty so much that I have a stake in it as an advisor.
Morty, in my opinion, is the best escape room tracker out there. You can log in your win times. You can post a photo, the team photo that you just took. You can add that in there to help you remember the game. You can also tag all of your friends. This is the best part, is because half of the time, I don't even have to track my own games. My friends all do it for me. And it's great to be able to just click on the list and scroll back through all of the games that you played. You can relive all of those happy memories. You can learn more at morty.app/repod, that's R-E-P-O-D, to sign up and get a special badge for our listeners. Link and details in the show notes.
In hearing you speak about Wasteland Weekend, and in literally everything I have read or watched, there is this palpable level of care and affection in the culture. And I'm wondering what, if anything, you did in the early years to foster this. Like, where did all of that come from?
I would love to be able to take credit for the fact that when people come to Wasteland and now Neotropolis, the biggest thing they say, even more than all the stuff that they get excited about visually and activity-wise, they always talk about what a welcoming place it is and how they never expected everyone to be so friendly. I would love to take credit for that. I think maybe we did a few things right. We ask certain people not to come back sometimes if they cause problems. We don't let just anybody in, no matter what. But we also tried to have a kind of positive leadership influence on the community, I suppose. A lot of it comes from our great group of people who do our social media as well. Over the years, the moderators there and everything kind of, not stepping in too soon, I think, but having the right judgment as to what is going to be a reflection of our values. Some people might think it's too draconian. I don't think so. I think we get the balance about right, just in terms of keeping things positive. But you know what? Also keeping things kind of aggressive. It should look scary. It should feel a little bit edgy, even when you're out there. As long as everyone acts friendly, we certainly don't want to nicify it to create a fake word to the point where you lose that Mad Max feel, or you lose that cyberpunk dark dystopian feel.
You can play with dark themes without actually being cruel and awful to each other.
Yeah, that's the idea. Absolutely. We grew very slowly compared to some other events. And what that meant was that by the time we had thousands of people out there, most of them knew someone else that was there or had been brought by someone else that was there. So it felt like an extended family. You know, if you're going to a concert one night and there's some people there who they might do something because they're never going to have to come back. They don't care if the place burns to the ground, so to speak. But at Wasteland, most people want to come back, and most people don't want to be shunned by their friends or ostracized by their smaller social community for ruining it for everyone. It tends to keep people in check. We've had so little, I don't want to jinx it, but the sheriffs say things like, I can't believe you guys don't have violence out here. You've got people drinking heavily in all these prop weapons. You've got mosh pits going on. You've got all this stuff happening. And there is never, like they say, we, one day at, I won't say what event, but there's like a public event that they have to also go to as sheriffs, like a county thing. And they're like, a few hours at that has way more incidents than you guys have had in all the years we've been coming out. So I'm very happy about that.
That's incredible to hear. As a event organizer who has been starting with very small events, and we've been really working to cultivate a culture of care and respect, but also allowing for people to have fun and be themselves. It's inspiring for me to see that this has scaled for you up to 4,000 people. It's no small feat.
You know, again, I've only been to Neotropolis, but there I felt the same thing. Everybody was really welcoming. I didn't get treated differently because, oh, I've never been to any of these events. A lot of the people there are people that have been attending Wasteland Weekend for many years, but it never felt cliquish. I was actually really amazed that even people who had been attending for 10 plus years made me feel like I belonged there. You know, it wasn't like, we're the cool kids and you're a newbie. And I really felt welcomed in, and they were so excited that I wanted to come see what they had built. And I think it goes a long way towards fostering that culture that makes it sustainable, because on the outside, they look pretty mean. Yeah. It's a bunch of dudes with beards and blacked out eyes and chains and leather, and it's grease and smoke and fire, you know?
Yeah.
That's also like the typical experience of going to a lot of different metal shows where like everyone is in black and wearing menacing clothing, but then you talk to them and they're the nerdiest people and kindest people you'll ever meet, but they are projecting an image that is a lot tougher than what actually might be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm so glad you had that experience, PG. That's always what I want to hear. In fact, I would say that at both of our events, when someone hears you're a first timer, it's sort of the opposite that you expect. Everybody's like, oh, that's so great. Well, you have to see this. Have you seen that? Well, let me show you this thing. And I love the way first timers get treated. And frankly, there was this attitude in some of the earlier years with, oh, the new people are always going to ruin the event. You have to gatekeep. You have to pull up the ladder behind you, because somebody new is not going to be like us. And this, people are going to find out about this, and then it's all going to be ruined. And it's really been the opposite. The people who come in who have heard about our events and have had it on their bucket list for years, and they finally come out, they have some of the most enthusiasm. Sometimes they have costumes that in the first 5 years of our event would have put everybody else to shame. I mean, like, people come prepared. And even if they don't, they have such a great time. People come alone and leave not just with friends, but feeling like they have new family and things like that. The number of people that describe themselves as introverts, but not at Wasteland or not at Neotropolis, or have said to us that it's the first time where they've felt like they belong somewhere, that's always really heartening.
BuzzShot is escape room software, powering business growth, player marketing, and improving the customer experience. They offer an assortment of pre- and post-game features, including robust waiver management, branded team photos, and streamlined review management for Yelp, TripAdvisor, Google Reviews, and Morty. BuzzShot now also has integration with our other Repod sponsors, Morty and Cogs.
Let's focus on the reliability of BuzzShot's waiver and team photo software. It will still work even if it's taken offline. That's right, Wi-Fi outages will not get in the way. When the Wi-Fi returns, everything will sync normally.
When asked about BuzzShot, Nick Moran of Phantom Peak said, "We needed to work with the most reliable and robust platform available. It was quite a challenge, and BuzzShot was the obvious choice due to their powerful platform and their flexible approach to working with us. Streamline your marketing and grow your escape room business. Repod listeners get an extended free trial and 20% off your first 3 months with no setup fees or hidden charges. Visit buzzshot.com/repod, that's R-E-P-O-D, to learn more. Link and details in the show notes."
You alluded to some of the health and safety and logistics considerations that are underpinning this event.
Yeah.
How are you serving up enough water and power to people in the middle of the desert? You're running concerts.
Yeah, all of it has to be brought out there. We don't have a well. We don't have city power. We don't have any of that. It's all done with generators. All the water is brought in from the outside. People that come out to camp are expected to bring their own water. Yes, we have food vendors and you can buy water, you can buy food, but people also bring their own stuff. People bring generators and we have regulations about generators to make sure things are safe there. The event obviously has very large generators that we rent that provide power for our stuff and for some other things. Logistically, it is tricky. Now, the good news is that we are not 5, 6, 12 hours from civilization. We're not out in the deep desert. We're 20 minutes from a town. It just looks like we're in the middle of nowhere. So that is helpful. And it's free ins and outs. It's not like you can't leave. So people can go out and resupply.
How many people does it take to stand this town up?
So in terms of the actual setup and the actual build, I'd have to look at the numbers, but I'm going to guess it's in the range of only about 50 people are the really hardcore ones that are out there early in building. Now, we get a surge of closer to 100 when we really get things going in the days before the event. And then, of course, there is some of that user-generated aspect. So the structures, especially at Wasteland, not so much at Neo. At Neo, we build a good portion of the city as the event. But at Wasteland, so much of it is the camps that people bring out. So they also show up early to do their stuff. That's one of the benefits. If you're going to be a themed faction at Neotropolis or a themed tribe at Wasteland, you get to come in early. Because they want the experience to last longer, because it's such a big deal in their lives, they're like, yeah, I'll do an extra week out there. In order to do that, I have to build a themed thing that we're going to live in. Yeah, that sounds fun. And it means I get more time on site. So that's the trade-off.
Longtime listeners of this show know that I'm not a big fan of sand. It's rough, it's coarse, it gets everywhere.
Exactly, exactly.
How are you mitigating its damaging effects, or is it just something that you accept is going to destroy stuff and plan for that?
Well, Anakin, the thing about it is that, yes, some of it we accept. Part of it is we build for it. We build things, although we came from the Hollywood world, in terms of set design and construction, we go more for steel and metal and things that can hold up to the elements and hold up to the wind. So the materials we build with is part of it. There's definitely some maintenance in the off season. There's just the acceptance that some things are going to get destroyed. And then our audiovisual guy that comes out and with his company does the sound for our main stage and does lighting and everything. He's a veteran of desert festivals. He knows that his subwoofers are going to get filled with sand. He knows that his mixing board needs to be protected. So you get people that are prepared for that sort of thing as well.
I'm wondering how you're handling some of the security and medical support. You mentioned you have staff on site, but like with everyone bringing in costumes and many of them are bringing in things that look like weapons, how are you making sure that people are abiding by the rules and are being safe with this stuff?
Yeah, well, it starts with when people roll in, we have the option to search every car and RV, not just to make sure someone isn't sneaking someone in the trunk, but also to make sure that there's something sketchy we should keep an eye on here. Like I said, we have sheriffs on site, but we also have a large in-house security team as well, and they will stop people. If a weapon looks really realistic, they will stop and just take a look at it. It doesn't mean they'll take it away from you, because it is part of the experience to have props out there. So it's not super restrictive the way, say, some indoor conventions need to be.
It's not like Comic-Con where if it's even remotely possible that it could be used as a weapon, they're just going to take it away from you.
No, we don't do that. We have certain rules where we say, hey, at night, once it's after dark, maybe don't walk around with certain things, partly for your own convenience, because if you're walking around with a sort of realistic looking gun after dark, you're going to get stopped a lot by security to take a look at it because it's hard to see. So we just leave that stuff in your camp at night. And then during the daytime, it's usually fine. If you have spiky things on your jacket, maybe don't get in the mosh pit. All those kind of common sense rules seem to work out for us. Our basic thing is if you're being stupid with it, if you're being unsafe with it, we're probably going to have to take it away. Don't make us do that.
Be an adult.
Yeah, and it's worked out pretty well so far.
I'm really glad to hear that. Before we dive into Neotropolis, I'm curious to learn about your experience as a cosplayer. How did you find your way into that world?
So it actually relates directly to the first Wasteland event we did. I'm one of those people that always loved costumes and Halloween was my favorite time of year, but I hadn't really gone deep into it to where I was going to conventions dressed up very much or anything. But then around 2010, just before that, I was working with my friend Carl because I wanted to do a Road Warrior costume for Halloween. I found this guy who was a super Mad Max fan and also an experienced costume guy. And he helped me put together this super accurate costume. And that was actually what brought us together. And then he was one of the guys I co-founded Wasteland Weekend with back in the day. And so since then, in the years since, it is a hobby of mine off and on. I love it. I love kind of creating and researching the stuff almost as much as wearing it, maybe more than wearing it these days.
Do you have any advice for someone who is listening to this episode? Maybe they've dabbled in cosplay, maybe they haven't, but they want to show up to one of your events and they are deeply intimidated by the idea of getting themselves in costume. Like, what is your core set of like guiding principles for newbies?
The first thing I would say is it's a little bit of a long read, but go to our website and read our theme page, neotropolis.com/theme, wastelandweekend.com/theme, because it talks exactly about that. It says, here's what we call Wasteland Basic or Neotropolis Basic. You can do a costume that will fit in just fine. It won't cost you a lot of money. You'll feel comfortable. And we encourage first timers to do that because the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to get there and they're going to be so inspired. At least most people will be so inspired by what everybody else is doing. And then you start to make friends with people online. You see what their techniques are. You see, oh, they're just using one of those and repurposing is that. That's really clever. I could probably do that. And then you watch some YouTube tutorials and you get over the fear of working with certain kinds of materials or whatever else. Our community is year round these days. Especially locally, there are people who host little informal costume building workshops or little swap days where like, hey, I bought this, this doesn't fit, but it might work for you, or you might want to make something out of this. By the time we'd done Wasteland for a few years, the number of people that have an entire closet filled with army surplus clothing that at some point they're going to do something with, they're not sure what, that gets to be a bit of an addiction. Like, I'm going to keep buying base pieces.
Maker hoarding.
Yeah, exactly. So that becomes a thing. Yeah, that's the main thing is I would say read about our theme and you'll realize it's probably not as difficult as you might imagine. And the main thing is because it's such a welcoming community, you're not going to get judged. You're not going to have people being super clicky and rude to you about how your costume is not good enough. If it's clear that you made an effort, everybody's just happy to see you. PG, you come in from the sort of rave scene. If it's anything like the old goth scene, that was the most clicky, obnoxious. I would always say I love the music, but I hate the people. It was all about, I'm cooler than you. My clothes are better than yours. I've been doing this longer. These are my cool friends.
It wasn't that way. And Jared, I came from the 90s rave scene. Okay. Old school.
Like, yeah.
It was very much to me. I felt like it was the same feeling, though. I felt like it was pretty welcoming.
I'm glad to hear that.
To me, though, a lot of times accessories make everything, you know,
yes.
The clothes don't have to be super elaborate, but you get one or two accessories that really buy into the world. And that already puts you a long way towards it. And the other thing is, a lot of people at these events have these accessories either for sale or for barter. So if you don't want to make it, you can always go and pick up a few things also.
That's a really good point. Yeah, our vendors that we have there, we don't just have food vendors. We have people that sell stuff to wear and cool props and stuff like that. You can certainly come in basic and leave fully upgraded.
Exactly. Speaking of upgrading and evolving, more recently, you have created Neotropolis, which is the cyberpunk sibling to Wasteland Weekend. Why did you decide to create a second event? And why set it against the backdrop of a completely different genre?
Yeah, that happened probably 2018, 2019. We started thinking about that. And it was, you know, we've done all this work to create Wasteland. And we've got this year round community now that's hungry for more. We would do the Wasteland Car Show in Los Angeles. We would do the Wastelanders Ball in Los Angeles, which was like a nighttime one night club event. And we were doing more and we had invested in the land. So we owned the property. And we felt like we could do a second event in the spring. Like, we were established enough that, hey, we can do one more of these. Fall and spring seems pretty good. It's the best time to have decent weather in the desert, which is not an easy thing. And originally, we were just going to do a smaller version of Wasteland in the spring. But it evolved to, you know, well, what if it was Wasteland, but a slightly different kind of theme? And then it came 180 degrees to let's do cyberpunk. It was just something that was on our minds. It's another big fandom of mine since I was a kid.
What if we make a lot more work for ourselves?
Yes, exactly. So yeah, what if we have to create an entire city out there? And what if we have to, it is so much more work. And when you realize when you're putting together an involved costume that's post-apocalyptic, it can be dirty, it can be messed up, it can be broken. It's a little harder.
When you're talking about showing up to one of the events and acquiring your costume as you go and kind of leaving yourself upgraded, in my mind, Wasteland Weekend, you're sort of like deliberately downgrading yourself, whereas it seems like Neotropolis, you are upgrading yourself. And it is a lot harder to make that upgraded aesthetic than it is to go and beat the hell out of everything.
It can be. And the main thing is we're dealing with technology.
In the desert.
As soon as we start doing Neotropolis, we need more power. We need more lights, more shiny things. Like, they don't have to be super clean because it's a dystopian cyberpunk, but it's not quite the same as, oh, well, you know, this thing burned up or this thing got really rusty, whatever. Like, that makes it look better for Wasteland. It's easy. Even vehicles, you know, it's a lot harder to make a really cool cyberpunk vehicle versus a cool Wasteland vehicle, at least for most. And yeah, so it is a level of difficulty that I'm not sure we really comprehended when we went into it, but it's hard for me to express how much I love not just cyberpunk, but all things retro future. That is my vibe. That is my jam. As a kid from the 80s, I have not let that go. And I still want the future that we were promised. I still want the jetpack. I still want the DeLorean. I'm still bitter that we don't have it. So I was like, you know what? We're going to make it. For 5 days, we will have it.
I feel the same way. And I feel really bitter that of all of the different sci-fi that emerged from that era, the one that seems to be coming true is RoboCop. And that just seems
unfair.
Just feels heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oh, so you got to come out to Neotropolis, David. So, Jared, in addition to taking on a massive new event, and this is a new event, and it feels like there's already a lot of lore surrounding Neotropolis. You know, yeah. When I went, it felt fully formed already. I was really impressed by that. So I was curious, how much of this was created and inserted by you and the organizers specifically for Neotropolis versus how much of it is maybe borrowed from Wasteland or how much of it is spontaneously created by the attendees?
Well, first of all, when we started with Wasteland Weekend, we had the benefit of all that great lore that George Miller had created with his Mad Max films. And yeah, and to some extent, Fallout and the other stuff. With Neotropolis, we were again upping the difficulty level, trying to create our own IP, right? To create our own story. Now, of course, it has a million influences. I mean, cyberpunk is all about influences. It's all about a mashup of things that have come before.
Sci-fi in general is all about influences.
Absolutely. But one of the big differences, for example, is if you're at Wasteland Weekend and you dress as a specific character from the Mad Max films, if you dress as Furiosa or Morton Joe or whatever, that's awesome. At Neotropolis, we've specifically asked people not to dress as any face characters. So you can be inspired by something from a film, but we don't want to see Darth Vader. We don't want to see Captain Kirk. We don't want to see that sort of stuff. We want people to do their own thing, which has been great because we have such a creative artistic community. And I love seeing people show off their art to other people. But part of it was so that we can make our own world from the start. I'm really glad, PG, that you felt like there was some of that there, because for us, we really feel like years one and two were kind of the beta test. And what we've got coming out for this year is what we originally had in mind, with much more of a central storyline, much clearer objectives for missions, much more obvious story elements, and all of that. That is a big part of this.
That leads me right into my next question, which is, one of the things that excited me the most about Neotropolis are the many missions and games that you can discover. And that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring you onto this podcast. And I've really been encouraging a lot of people who are into escape rooms, immersive gaming, of all of that, to come to Neotropolis, because that feels like a central part of the experience there. There's a lot of room for improv, emergent gameplay within the framework of Neotropolis. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how these missions and quests work and what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably going to talk fast because I'm excited about this part. But we have some new stuff happening this year that's going to make it even more clear. So you get to the event, and let's say you just come in, you've got no preconceived kind of thing going on. You don't even necessarily have a character. You've got your basic costume that you want to wear. Again, you can go through the whole event just having a good time. all the mission aspect, that is another layer that you don't have to unlock, right? Even when you do the missions, there are going to be details that you might want to skip over. We compare it to when you play a video game, there are people that play like a quest style video game or even open world game where every time the dialogue comes up, they're just tapping the button, like, don't care. Just get me the info I need to get to this next side quest. Or some people are going to read every word and every little document that they can find. There is that aspect to this. It is very much like a real life video game in that sense. And when you get there, we encourage people to choose one of three allegiances. This is going to unlock an extra level of, for lack of a better word, gameplay for people. And the allegiances are the Resistance, Helix Corporation, or Endline, which is more of the pseudo-military company, right? Again, in a video game for character creation, what's my allegiance going to be? Now, you can be any kind of character you want. You could be a bounty hunter that works for the Resistance. You could be a corporate guy that works for Endline. You can have your own character within that allegiance, and it doesn't mean that you're no longer part of whatever your faction is. It's just going to choose a story path for you. And then you go to the Allegiance headquarters. For the Resistance headquarters, you first have to find it because, of course, it's secret. Once you do a basic mission, you will get an Allegiance patch that you wear. And then you can earn what we call pips, which are higher ranks for that as you go along. So there are real tangible things that you can earn as you go. And the missions, there will be story-based missions and not. So for example, there could be a mission that's just, oh, you need to go and hack that machine, and it'll be some sort of basic thing. Or we need to find out information about the Resistance apparently has sabotaged something, and there's a bartender that might know about that, and they'll send you to someone else. So there's those kinds of things as well. Some of those will relate to the main story, and some of them just exist in the broader universe. But this year, to go even one step further, to kind of make things run smoothly, everyone who wants one can get an RFID wristband. It's in addition to the wristband that you get when you come in. So you come into the event, you have a wristband that says you have a ticket. It means we don't throw you out for not having a wristband. But if you go to our command center or you go to the Allegiance headquarters, you can ask for, I don't even know what we're going to call it yet, but you can ask for one of these special silicone RFID wristbands. And to get that, you have to read through a quick set of rules. So it shows that you have read through and kind of know how the game works. Don't rough up the actors, basic things like that. We're going to have marks for this item is hackable. We're going to have marks for this item is stealable. This item is in play, things like that, because we realize we should probably let people know that. Otherwise, we're going to have people coming in and hacking things they shouldn't be hacking, taking things that are not actually in play. People are going to be confused. So now, anytime we see someone wearing one of these wristbands, we know that that person is on that extra level of the game as well and is ready to participate. So if I'm playing a character and I go up to someone and do some kind of in-world speech about something that I think they might be interested in, if they're wearing one of those wristbands, they're probably going to get a sense of what's going on. If they're not, they can still do it, but they might be confused. And you don't have to have this wristband to participate in all this. It just tells us that you're extra eager to be part of it.
When you're talking about hacking, is there like an internet or local area network or something going on here?
Yeah. So one of the logistical things we deal with is the fact that internet out there is pretty spotty. Cellular internet is not great. So there is what they call the NeoNav, which is an intranet. So we set up our own network. One of the factions actually helped create this and runs this for us. And that is part of it. And then we would have, in terms of hacking, there might also be some standalone machines where you're not actually hacking a network, but you're hacking that. It's part of a puzzle game on the machine, that sort of thing. And there are even things like people hacking each other's signage and monitors. And again, for that sort of thing, this year, we're going to make it more clear. We're going to have a sticker on something if you should hack it or if you're welcome to try.
It's a cyberpunk world, not DEF CON.
Right, exactly. But we are going to be leaning in to more of that. That part, the hacking aspect is going to grow. We have people coming out that are absolutely more in that world and actually want to create some more involved stuff for us. We want there to be levels of that sort of thing. So the people that are really into it. We have robot fights out there. We have robot makers, people that do battle bots and shows like that. And they're always encouraging people to come out and build robots for that as well. So the maker community is very much, all of that stuff is very much involved in this event.
I love it. Those are my peoples.
I got so many more questions about this, but we'll try to get to some more details in the bonus show.
Yeah, make them pay for it.
Exactly. Do you have any advice for first timers to Neotropolis?
Yeah. Well, similar, like I said, go to neotropolis.com/theme, read our website. We put a lot of information on there, and then people ask us very basic questions that you can find on the website. We also have very active social media, Instagram, but Facebook I know is not as cool with the younger folks as it used to be, but there's so much interaction there and you can get so much advice from our official Facebook groups like Wastelander Central and Neotropolis Central. Those are good for brushing up on before you come out. And it also depends on what do you want to get out of it. If you're just going to come out to party, that's awesome. We would love to have you. You can just look at our entertainment lineup and be good to go. Make sure you're prepared with water and food and any kind of weather. It can get very cold. It can get very hot. We never know what we're going to get. But if you're one of those people that wants to participate in more of the gaming and puzzle and LARPing aspect, you absolutely should read up on the stuff on our website about allegiances, about how that sort of stuff works. And we are going to be producing some more video content that kind of walks people through things, some PSAs, in-world kind of stuff, as well as putting out some of the story elements before the event starts so that people who are paying attention can roll in with a little bit of backstory. Because we're still kind of looking at this as like a whole new, when I think of them in terms of writing, we think of them as seasons. And I'm thinking of the first 2 years of the pilot, and this is really season one. And so for season one, we've got a lot of story stuff happening.
One of the other things that I'll also note is that if you've never gone to events like this, there is a pretty intense bartering system going on. And I didn't really get it fully. But when I went this second time, I remember I went with Tommy and that whole crew. And he spent a lot of time picking through, I don't know, clothes. There was a booth where someone was like, you can take clothes. And I was like, what are you going to do with these secondhand clothes? And then he kept trading them throughout the day. He would be like, I'll trade you this. And eventually he traded up to something really cool. And I was like, oh, like that's how it all works, you know?
Yeah. Some of the people, that's one of the fun aspects is some people get really into what can I start with bartering and what can I get up to? Can I show up with a sock and leave with a car? And they get really into it. It's really fun. And people, some of the really fun kind of user generated character stuff that happens comes from bartering. They come up with these really fun, very dystopian future barter characters that they do, which is really cool. And people will also barter some amazing things. Like there are people, you need to come out with something really good because somebody might have something that they would sell on Etsy for a lot of money kind of thing, like a really cool prop stuff that they will barter, but you better have something good for them. It's the little silly things, but it comes up, like people have some nice stuff.
Interesting. Changing the subject for just a moment to your regular career, or at least some part of your regular career.
Nothing regular about it, but yes.
What's it like voice acting as a character as iconic as Captain Jack Sparrow in Kingdom Hearts 3 and Disney Infinity?
Yeah, and a plug for Disney Speedstorm that came out recently, and Voices in the Parks as well. It's a blessing, I guess, is the first thing I would say. It's exciting. I'm very lucky. Having worked with Disney for as long as I have, doing that character for as long as I have, and being the person to voice that character when Johnny's not available, it's hard to describe. And it's a weird kind of acting because I still don't really consider myself a real actor because I'm channeling his performance. I'm channeling that character. If I do something that's not true to the way he would have done it or the way that character would have been written, it's not right. But it is the strangest second career you could possibly have. I was a full-grown adult. You know, I'd been on college radio one time and I'd done a few things, but I was not a voiceover professional and never thought I could be. Always thought it would be cool, but seemed like it wasn't a possible thing. And then I was one of those rare people that actually got discovered in a way that people don't and you just don't think is real. And
wait, can you elaborate? How did you get discovered?
I was taking my very first voiceover class. And I was enjoying it and I felt like I was doing well. And then, and people had made comments about my voice before. I would probably get made fun of for my voice more than I would get complimented because that's how kids are. If you've got a voice this deep when you're 11 years old, people are going to joke about it. I would get crap from people back home because I come from New England. For whatever reason, I didn't have the New England accent even that my parents have. And it wasn't something I did consciously, but I would get made fun of because, oh, you're trying to talk so proper. You think you're not blue collar, you know, and I wasn't trying to. It just maybe I'd watch too many movies. I don't know what it was, but I would get a little bit of you're pretending you're not working class and all that crap.
You have a pronounced diction. It's good. It's good radio voice.
Thank you. So anyway, I was in a voiceover class and we were very fortunate that the finale of the class is one of the folks from Disney came in to listen to us. And he was the head of Disney character voices at the time, which is one of the benefits of living in Los Angeles and taking a class in Burbank, is these people are local, they're available, and they're friends with the people who teach the classes. And he heard me do a Disney character that he thought I did a decent job at, wasn't Jack. And then at the same time, they happened to be casting for, we want like a permanent Jack Sparrow voice, and we need somebody really good, and we need someone who really fits. And they did not want me to audition. My teacher had to really press them to get me the shot, because they were dealing with much bigger actors than me for this, because this was gonna be a lot of things. It was merchandising and talking toys and theme parks and whatever else. It was gonna be a lot of work. And I was very fortunate to have my teacher took me under her wing, trained me for doing this, and I had no idea if I could do it. And the next thing you know, I was doing it, and that got me my agent, and that got me other work. And yeah.
Are you able to give us a little snippet of the voice? Is that possible?
Yeah, I can. Let's see.
She's safe, just like I promised. She's all set to marry Norrington, just like she promised. And you get to die for her, just like you promised. So we're all men of our word, really. Except for Elizabeth, who is in fact a woman.
Or I'll just say,
Captain Jack Sparrow, at your service.
It's pretty good.
That's really, really good.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, sure. I do all kinds of voiceover in my spare time, but I also have a specific thing, which is that I do voice matching, is what they call it. I will voice either celebrities or even just, hey, we want to recreate this newscast from the 60s, but we can't get the rights from CBS. So you recreate that newscaster's voice, those kinds of things. The annoying thing about it is a lot of them I can't actually talk about because they don't want people to know that it's not the actual voice. So that can be a little frustrating. I don't get to hype it up as much as I would like.
Life under NDA.
Yeah.
To wrap all of this up, when you started Wasteland Weekend way back in 2010, what did you imagine success would look like? And how does that vision compare to what this has grown into today?
So the very first Wasteland, I remember we weren't sold out or anything. We weren't sure if people would even show up. And I remember just wondering, is anyone even going to show up? This was in the evening of the first night, and I started seeing all these lights, all these car headlights and taillights coming in from the desert. And it felt like that scene in Field of Dreams, where if you build it, they will come, and they actually start showing up. That was kind of a magic moment. And then from that point, I was like, there might be something to this. To me, success looked like it gets to keep going. People enjoy themselves. It gets bigger, but not too big. It becomes better quality. And success was never that this is going to be my full-time job. I never wanted it to be, because I have just so many other interests. So as much as I love it, it was never, I hope I get to the point where I make enough money where I can just do this. It was never about that. It was about, can this be something self-sustaining? And can this make people happy? And it's evolved, especially with Neotropolis now, it's evolved into, can this fulfill some of the job fantasies I've had, right? So always when I got into this business wanting to write and direct movies, and I got to be a Hollywood screenwriter for a while, and that was great. And I still may dip back into that at some point. But for right now, I get to create a giant movie set. I get to have actors. I get to write stories. I get to create an experience that is so immersive in a way that no movie could be. And the thing is, we were doing this a long time before the word immersive was a buzzword. So it gets thrown around a lot. And I understand why. And I love all kinds of immersion. I love music that's multi-channel because it's more immersive. I love VR headsets. But to me, there is a special level of immersion when you're not wearing your street clothes, you're wearing something else. You hear actors talk about, it's when I put the costume on as that character. This is what wardrobe and costuming does for me as an actor. This is what makeup does for me as an actor. So when you get to do that as a person, and then you're in this environment where it's 360 degrees with no civilization in sight, and you can get transported to another world, there's something really, really special about that.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Jared, what comes next for you? Do you have any other projects on your plate?
Right now, just mostly focused on the next upcoming Neotropolis, because we were excited for it. And there's so many things we're doing, new things we're building. Man, I've got three cars I'm working on, three cyberpunk cars I'm personally trying to finish. I've got costumes I haven't started yet. So I'm very much the excited participant in these things, as well as running the whole thing, which is not always easy to balance. So yeah, that's my main focus, is the next version of Neo. And then if we can get that on its feet for like a couple of years, then maybe I'll start thinking about what's next. Although things tend to come my way that I can't say no to. I wish I could. So you never know. We do get requests for certain things based on what we do. I'll just leave it at that for that one.
And tickets are on sale now for Neotropolis, unless it has sold out by the time this episode airs. And when does Neotropolis take place?
So Neotropolis this year is April 24th to the 28th. And tickets, yeah, we are expecting to sell out. I don't know how soon before the event we will sell out. And then right after Neotropolis ends, tickets will go on sale for Wasteland Weekend in the fall.
And what are the dates for Wasteland Weekend?
Wasteland Weekend is September 25th to the 29th, 2024.
It sounds amazing. I might have to try to brave the summer heat to go check that out as well. And so, Jared, what is the best way for people to follow your work, to follow your events, or to connect with you?
Yeah, I'll plug myself first on Instagram as Real Jared Butler. I think that's what I am on Facebook as well. And then for Neo, we're all over social media as Neotropolis. And then for Wasteland, all the social media links are on our website, but we're either Wasteland HQ in some places or we're Wasteland Weekend. I would suggest for both of them, go to YouTube and look for Neotropolis Official or Wasteland Weekend Official, and you can see the official highlight reels from the years that we've put out. A 1 minute video will give you a much better sense of what it's all about than anything I could tell you.
I'll also add that there is a robust Facebook community around Neotropolis that I found to be a pretty good resource as well for information about costuming and how it works.
Yeah. And if you're local to Los Angeles, there is still time to, even before and even after the event, there is a lot of local stuff, either official things that we do and also plenty of unofficial things where you'll see people show up with their cyberpunk gear, and some of the bands that play at Neotropolis will play locally and people show up to that, or there will be a sort of a theme night at a bar. There's a lot going on with the community.
Jared, thank you so much for joining us. This is one of the rare episodes where I have not experienced any of your work, and so I have taken it all in through deep research. And I am in awe of what you and the community around you have produced with both Wasteland Weekend and Neotropolis. I hope so badly that I can get out to experience one of these. I'm even going to be willing to brave the desert sand. Yeah, it's really incredible to see what you have built.
That means a lot, because I know you guys are a lot more familiar with the broader world of immersion. And so that's a huge compliment. And thank you. And by the way, you can stay in an RV and you can stay in the local hotel that's only 20 minutes away. You do not have to desert camp.
The Reality Escape Pod is produced by Teresa Piazza with support by Lisa Spira. We're edited by Steve Ewing of Stand Inside Media, music by Ryan Elder, logo by Janine Procht, and all of this is brought to you by RoomEscapeArtist.com, your home for well-researched, rational, and reasonably humorous escape room and immersive gaming content and events. If we haven't made it clear enough this season, the Reality Escape Convention, Recon, is happening August 18th and 19th, 2024. And if you buy your tickets before May 1st, you will get special benefits in the form of priority session selection for Imagine Ne'er-Do-Wells and the 49 Boxes. Do it now. Get your tickets. We'd also really appreciate it and hope to see you at Recon. You can learn more at realityescapecon.com. Details in the show notes. Believe it or not, we are 10 years into Room Escape Artist. And it took a long time for us to decide that we were going to go and open up a Patreon, but we eventually got there because some loyal readers at the time were really insistent. Over the years, we have added a lot of different things to that Patreon. People at the $5 level get access to the bonus show for this podcast. Folks at the $15 level get the incredible Spoilers Club. But more than anything, they get to support all of the things that we're doing here. And that, it's hard to tell you just how much that means to PG and I, to the entire team at Room Escape Artist. We put in so much time, so much love, and so much energy into everything that we are doing here to support the escape room and immersive gaming communities, to push them to be safer and more fun, to be smarter and more efficient, to try and pull new players in. We're working on all of these things all the time. And the money and support that we get from our Patreon community is the fuel that keeps all of that moving forward. If you're a part of that, thank you so much. And if you have been considering becoming a part of it, give it a shot. We really, truly will appreciate it. Thanks. You can learn more about all of this at patreon.com/roomescapeartist. Big thank you to our highest level Patreon supporters. Karen, Dawnward, Panic Room, Escapism, Olivier Escape, Escaparium, Byron Delmonico, Breakout Games, Keystone Escape Games, Derek Tam, Paula Swan, and Rex Miller. Thank you for your ongoing support. And thank you to all of our patrons at all levels.
You've made it to the end of this podcast. You must be an amazing, resilient, and very loyal person. If you're still feeling that delightful afterglow, why don't you head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you review your podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. It really means a lot and it helps us to spread the word.
Out at our events, we get international media, which is really fun. And one of the fun things about our events being fully immersive is we require any local newscaster, any European documentary crew, they all have to be in costume when they come out. Some of them are not happy about it, by the way, because we've tried to tell them, but they, I don't know if they think we're joking or what. Honestly, it tends to be the local guys from LA. Like if there's like a union sound guy with his white Panavision t-shirt and his cargo shorts on, and we tell him he's got to put something else on, he gets very surly. So they all come out, but they, most of the time they're great. They come out and they wear something that just blends in a little bit. And so it's not so bad that there's a news crew going around. And I remember we had this one group out from Japan and they were awesome, super enthusiastic. We are literally big in Japan with Wasteland, which is awesome. And they were talking about the fact that we have a sort of tradition that grew up at Wasteland where people flip each other off. You give someone the finger, but it's a sign of affection, right? And then someone, a friend of mine, came up with the way, this won't be so good for audio, but you put up two middle fingers with your hands in the shape of a W. A middle finger in each hand crossed over, and it looks like our WW symbol for Wasteland. And so one of the reporters was, can you demonstrate this for me in very broken English? And so I did the W, the double middle fingers to the camera, and then he did it and very excitedly yelled into the camera, W fuck sign, which is, so I hope that one day that I can go to Japan and somehow it'll be like a Homer Simpson moment where I'm walking down the street and everybody's flipping me off with two fingers saying W fuck sign at me.